I can clearly remember the day I saw the new tunnel being drilled back in 1883. I was a reporter for the Brisbane Courier and was on the train from Bundaberg with the Queensland Premier. We left at 8 o'clock and got to Gillen's siding 2 hours later, a distance of 33 miles. That was as far as the railway line had been built. So we were taken by buggy for the last 10 miles by Mr. McSharry of O'Rourke and McSharry. They were the contractors for the section of the railway to Mount Perry, and their headquarters at the tunnel looked more like a township than a temporary railway camp. After dinner, Sir Thomas and the others inspected the tunnel, each armed with a candle, and took a great interest in the working of the Ingersoll drill, which was in operation. The tunnel was being driven through the Bulbunda Range, which was composed of solid granite, and so didn't need lining or additional support. The drill was the only one in the colony that could go successfully through granite and was working at both ends of the tunnel, with both of the machines being operated from one engine at the eastern end. The power was obtained by means of compressed air supplied through pipes from the engine, and one great advantage of the drills is that the air, after being used, escaped and ventilated the tunnel, thus saving the cost of making air shafts. When the party entered the tunnel, the drill had been placed in position, and in an almost incredibly short time had bored a long hole into the hard granite, which it entered at the rate of from 1 to 2 inches per minute. The amount of pressure upon each drill averaged about 60 pounds to the inch, and each drill required 3 men to drive it. Then shortly before 3 p.m, Sir Thomas was again on the road, being driven over the mountainous track to Mount Perry, where he received a most hearty welcome from the residents, complete with flags, ribbons, bouquets and a banquet. Can you imagine the excitement? Finally, after years of lobbying, speeches, petitions, newspaper articles, the very first railway trip from Bundaberg to Mount Perry. It was such a great occasion that a public holiday was declared and 400 people travelled on the train to Mount Perry. They arrived to see a pretty triumphal arch, besides which were the school children of the mining centre, looking all so neat and trim. Hearty cheers filled the air and reverberated amongst the valleys around. A grand lunchtime banquet for 250 people was held in the Oddfellows Hall, with tables lavishly spread with all the dainties available and flowers and fruits decorated aboard. The mayor proposed a toast, "Success to the Bundaberg and Mount Perry Railway," while Mr. Goodwin of the Bundaberg and Mount Perry Mail read an ode he had composed in celebration of the opening.
"We meet today amidst these hills clad in their glorious robes of living green, beneath whose surface lies the glittering ore. With the iron way together links the land of agriculture on the sea, where the great Mother Earth uprears with joy the teeming wealth from rich juice-giving cane."
It was inevitable that the government decided to close the railway line. Although it served the town very well for over 70 years, there was just not enough passengers and goods traffic had declined. Over 100 people attended a protest meeting in 1957, but the decision was made. In October 1960, the service came to an end when the rail motor made its last journey, leaving Bundaberg with 7 passengers, parcels and mail. 40 passengers made the final trip back to Bundaberg with 6 of the town's oldest residents. Mrs. V. Robinson reflected the general attitude in this poem published in 1961.
"She stood there old, brown and dejected, where the glittering line swung away. We clustered around her in silence, for this was her farewell day. Dear old motor, how often to Bundy, with our ports and blankets we'd go. Now these times are finished forever, no more will you take us about. Our lifeline is gone, we wish we're on the last rail motor out."
Somewhere out in the dark, warm or cold, there are creatures that are hanging around, I'm told. Not right side up, but upside down, and they might live in your town.
This tunnel is the home for thousands of tiny microbats. They are mammals just like us, but weigh less than a mouse. During the day, the bats sleep on the roof of the tunnel, which provides a comfortable humidity and temperature for them. It's okay to look quietly at these little animals, but please don't disturb them because this is their home. At night, bent-wing bats leave the tunnel to feed. They only eat insects like mosquitoes, moths, beetles, and flying ants, and they can catch them in pitch darkness while they're flying around. They do this by making high-pitched calls and listening to the echoes. This is known as echolocation. These bats can live for about 20 years. And each year the mothers have one or two babies known as pups. A mother bat can find its own pup even in a crowd of thousands, just by its smell and call. The mothers suckle their babies and carry them around until they're old enough to fly. Some of these bats could be infected with a disease called lysavirus, which is deadly to humans. But you don't have to worry so long as you are careful. The virus is transmitted through the saliva of an infected bat, and humans only become infected if we are bitten or scratched. So don't try to catch or handle a bat, and you should be fine. You can't catch the virus by touching bat droppings which are on the ground in the tunnel. It's easy to learn more about these amazing little native animals. Just check out the website of the Australasian Bat Society, a non-profit organisation which promotes the conservation and study of bats.
Well, you're gonna have to face the fact. Yes, you're gonna have to face the fact.